It's finally here.
All right, yeah. And you've got a rather interesting guy to produce it too, haven't you?
Yeah, we worked with Aaron Smith, best known from Seven Horns, Seven Eyes, and working with Jeff Loomis. And he's a up-and-coming guy over in the Seattle area, so we're stoked to work with him on this.
Yeah, he's got a really crisp, just big-sounding production from all the stuff I've heard him do.
Yeah, he does.
And from what I heard, because as of right this moment, I've only listened to the Plot Thickens off of the new Voids record that you uploaded. Because you uploaded a couple songs online, right?
We did, yeah.
Get a taste going.
Yes.
And I definitely heard a big improvement in production compared to even, like, you know, An Abstract Existence or anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is night and day for us. This is the album we've been trying to make. So everything came together, the songwriting, the production, the artwork, everything finally clicked. So this should be our statement album, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking it feels like maybe this is your guys' complete entrance into the scene, almost in a sense, because you've got that production job behind it and it's the third full length. So
yeah, and I'm viewing it kind of like as a rebirth of the band, because we've been together 9 years, so we finally have something that we're completely proud of in all aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And it took quite a while to get there, but hey, that's part of the process.
Would you say there was anything on it that you or maybe any other guys really pushed your, like, playing or writing chops on beyond what you had done before, maybe?
I think the biggest thing for us was just learning restraint, actually, and trying to write songs that we didn't wear out a riff. Because in the past, we have some long songs, and we would go back and analyze those, and there's parts that we played way too long. Mm-hmm. So now we tried to take the idea of a 10-minute song and make that into more of like a 4 or 5 minute song. So having some restraint and keeping the pace of the song moving rather than turning it into an extended jam session or something. So
yeah, it's easy to get carried away especially in the prog metal kind of world, you know.
Definitely. Yeah, and we did try to do some new things, just some different sort of time signatures and some different genres. But overall, I mean, I think anybody puts the album on, they're going to know it's us.
Oh, fantastic. Were you thinking about, when you were like, come up with these kind of different time signature parts, were you thinking about it being odd in any way, or did it just come out that way and you're like, oh, that's something we haven't done before?
Yeah, it just came out naturally, because we didn't figure out the time signatures until we were setting up tempo tracks.
Mm.
But it was definitely a different feel to us, you know, some parts in 7/8 and some odd phrasings here and there. And it wasn't something we planned. It just happened that way. And then when we go and do the tempo tracks and we realize, oh, it's in that time signature and this, and we haven't done that before. So yeah, it was nice to do something different and push ourselves in that direction a little bit.
All right, definitely. What gear did you use as for like to record your bass stuff specifically?
To do the bass, I had my standard live rig. So it's an Ampeg 350 head and the SVT 350. A 410 cabinet and a 1x15 cabinet. And then so we did a couple mics on that. We did a mic on a 10-inch speaker and a mic on the 15, a room mic, and then a direct out from a Sans amp. So that way we had four different sources. We could blend those together. And then in post, we added a few effects here and there just to kind of brighten things up. So it was a lot of options. It wasn't just one microphone and that's it. So yeah, we definitely... We do that with every instrument, though. We do a lot of different sources to have options.
Oh, right. That's probably the best way to do it, I would think, in a lot of ways. And how is Aaron, like, as a producer? Is he, like, a real workhorse in the studio, or is he, like, real perfectionist, or is he kind of laid back? Or?
No, he's a perfectionist, and that's why we wanted to work with him. He gets where we're coming from, and he actually put a lot of little production tips in, or not tips, but, like, spice to the album, things that we didn't think of. Like for one of the, in the Plot Thickens you were talking about, there's a part where it brings it way down and he puts kind of this filter effect on it to make it sound kind of sucked back and in a cavern almost. And he did all kinds of things like that just made this album that much more special and dynamic.
Oh, that's what you want from a producer too.
Oh,
Because, you know, hear some stories about even, like, Rick Rubin being kind of like the guy who just sort of, like, lays back and, you know, like a chair, everyone's playing. Then he says something, he'll be like, oh, you should do this. But, you know, it sounds like Aaron's not one of those guys, you know.
He's not. No, he's on the same page with us, and he's similar to Jarek in terms of what we're trying to get out of the music. I think Aaron he would make a great addition to our band, really. He would fit right in. So it was easy working with him, and I think we'll probably pursue that in the future and hopefully work together again.
All right. Well, that'd be awesome, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what's the first song you're going to be playing for us tonight? Because obviously everyone listening, we're going to get some Odyssey out there for y'all. So what's going to be first?
The first track is called Like Moths to the Flame, and it's the third track on the album.
All right, so it's going to be Like Moths to the Flame by Odyssey off of their upcoming, right, release,
yes.
Voids. When is it coming out? It
comes out February 5th.
All right, February 5th, everybody. Give it a listen.
We'll be right back.
KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. You're listening to Mind of Metal, and this is a sort of a continuation of a previous episode where we interviewed the entire Odyssey band locally. Right now we've just got Jordan Hilker, the bassist from the band, here with us, and he's talking a bit about the upcoming release Voids they've got coming out. And that last song we just heard there was Like Moths to the Flame, right?
Yes, it was.
Like Moths to the Flame by Odyssey. Definitely I can kind of hear a little bit what you were talking about, taking like these 10-minute long song ideas and like making them into more compact structures, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just, and that was the big focus with this album, was some restraint. And it's tough playing instrumental. When you play a song over 10 minutes long, people start to kind of lose their focus. And we've just noticed these tracks on Voids, the longest one is about 7 minutes, the shortest is about 3, and we just noticed people are responding a lot better to these songs. They're catchier. I think they can just relate to the song more than a 10 to 20 minute long song like we tried in the past.
Do you find them any more fun to play because of that, maybe? Or?
Yeah, I enjoy it more. It's fun to make a set now that's 5 or 6 songs in a half an hour set, rather than we used to play a 20-minute long song and then would have time for one other song, maybe. So I look back in my notebooks and seen that there's a set where it was just literally 2 songs and that was a half an hour set. So, yeah, it's nice to break it up.
Oh, awesome. So what did you guys notice any difference in like your music listening habits while writing this stuff or putting it together? Because one thing I've noticed is you got guys like Michael Ackerfeld who say like when he's writing, he can't listen to anything that's like what he's doing. Like can't listen to any metal or like, stuff like that. He has to completely kind of shut it out. Do you guys do that, or do you keep listening to a lot of the similar stuff, or how do you approach that aspect of the writing process?
Well, for Luke and I think we always listen to the same things we do anytime. I don't think I draw too much inspiration from the metal I listen to. I obviously enjoy it, but a lot of the riffs that we have are written by Jarek, and then we'll go and work on them together. And I think he listens to a lot of Snarky Puppy, which is kind of like jazz fusion, and bands that are very technical like that aren't metal. But yeah, I don't know, because this album was written over such a long period of time that if I were to try to not listen to like the Contortionist or Opeth or Dream Theater or anything like that, I'd be very sad.
Yeah.
So no, I never really shut out any of those bands, because I certainly do draw some inspiration, but I don't think we copycat any bands.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what I hear also with Jarek's playing, like, he does rely a lot more on, like, full chordal type riffing than you would hear in most metal bands, even, like, a lot of prog metal bands. That's usually, like, they'll have one section that has, like, the more chordal sound, but it sounds like he really kind of builds a bigger sound off of that than maybe some other guys do.
Yeah, and I think that's probably drawing an inspiration from jazz, where they have some very odd chords. Well, he also listens to a lot of K-pop and things like that. So I think probably the melodies there, because these songs, in my opinion, are a little catchier than we've accomplished in the past, and that might be from him listening to pop music. So maybe that's some good inspiration that is coming in. You know, he listens to an eclectic variety of music. Whatever he's doing is working.
Who would you say is like, I don't know how to put it, who would be like the most metal-oriented listener of the three of you? Would you say or it's like a tie between one of you?
It's probably Lucas.
Think so, yeah?
Yeah, I would say so. Because usually he's got a lot of stuff like yesterday. I get in his car, he's got Cryptopsy on. And
yeah.
He'll have a lot of Flesh God Apocalypse. And
awesome, yeah.
Septic Flesh. And yeah, he's big into it. Well, all of us listen to a wide variety. But I would say he's probably listening to the heaviest music out of all of us, the most consistently.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you have that set up in a band where there's like one guy who's more of this and then more of that. I mean, even like Dream Theater are kind of like that too. I mean, Jordan Ruda is probably the biggest prog guy. Like,
oh, I would say so, yeah. Yeah, it's good though to have that balance. I like that our drummer is the one listening to the heaviest music, because that's going to translate to the drums. So.
Oh, yeah, and that's kind of what you want from that too.
Oh, yeah.
Have like a pounding, backing drummer to go in with the whole sound. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does he write much of the overall musical structuring, or does he mostly just focus on like the drums? I know, like last time we were here, you talked about how he's kind of like the most picky about the songwriting.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he is. He keeps us on track. I think what he brings to the table is he's great at song structure and making sure we don't kill a riff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good at song arrangement. That's what he's bringing to the table. And then there's sometimes where he'll make a beat and we write a riff around it. Mm. But more often than not, Jarek will write a riff or two and bring it to practice. We'll start there and then I'll, you know, hear something in my head and create that. And we just kind of play off each other that way. And then Luke will help arrange it, you know, how many times we should do things and make sure we have solid transitions and all of that. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's a good blend between the three of us. I think we all know our role pretty well.
Yeah, it's good to kind of develop that as a band. You know,
oh, yeah.
It kind of falls into their roles in that sort of way. Let's see, what's the next song you're going to want to play for us here?
Yeah, the next song is track 4 from the album. It's called Motives. And it was the first single we released online. So some people may have already heard it through our Facebook or Bandcamp. But, yeah, we'll play it. It's one of my favorite tracks on the album. I think it is kind of sums up the album in one song.
All right, well, here we go. This will be a song called Motives off of the upcoming album Voids by the local Spokane progressive metal band Odyssey. Give it a listen, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is Don Thompson.
And Rick Rubin.
And you can join us every Wednesday evening for Irish Music on Tap.
Join us for some jigs and reels, polkas and slides and songs.
That's every Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. on KYRS Thin Air Radio.
KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. You are listening to Mind of Metal. I'm your host, Garrick, and I would just like to let you know that Stage Left will present its annual 1 Minute Play Festival on January 30th at 7:30 p.m. and 31st at 2 p.m. The show features 37 super short plays by playwrights across the U.S. Information at SpokaneStageLeft.org. And we are here indeed still with Jordan Hilker from Odyssey.
I'm still here.
Yeah, he's still here with us, and we just heard a song off of the upcoming album Voids called Motives. Is there anything you want to kind of tell us a little bit about that track particularly? Or
I guess the main thing with that one is just I felt like it sums up Odyssey very well in one song, and also sums up the Voids album pretty well. It just kind of showcases what we do. There's heavy moments, there's some that are kind of more experimental and fun, and really showcases Jarek's talents quite a bit. There's some hand cramping weird riffs in that song. So
yeah, when I saw you guys at the Pin and you did I think it was the Machine Stops from the Turning Tide EP, I was pretty impressed with just some of the changes, the way he played through the parts on that one too. It was pretty nuts.
Yeah, pretty much any song he's got some moment where there's weird hand position in there, so it's pretty impressive to watch and very intimidating to play in a band with someone like that. But hey, I'm still there 9 years later, so I must be doing something right.
Oh, exactly. And so we were talking a little bit before during the first song about the touring plans. You were mentioning that you guys are kind of looking at maybe not focusing as much on the extended touring stuff. So anything you kind of want to let people know about for upcoming shows or anything like that? Or
yeah, we'll probably be doing, we'll definitely be playing in Spokane. And then I think our goal will be weekends, maybe Friday, Saturday, or Thursday through Saturdays, just depending on our schedule, and doing some out-of-town, just regional stuff, so Tri-Cities, Seattle, maybe Portland if we can squeeze that one in. It's a bit of a drive, but we'll try, and Missoula, of course. And then we found some other fun spots to play over on the peninsula near Kingston. We have some friends over there called Ismusha that are a great instrumental band that we toured with. And yeah, we'll probably go back there and play that area, Bainbridge Island and Suquamish. They're little towns, but there's nothing else going on, so people come out to these shows. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, I imagine so. Yeah. And you've done, I know you did before, an all-instrumental show of a lineup of bands, and you're talking about doing maybe another one of those too, right?
Yeah, we've actually got, our first show back is April 5th at the Pin, and we're opening for Intervals, Pliny, Save Us from the Archon, and Angel Vivaldi. And in a few weeks after that, we're doing the official CD release party for Voids at the Big Dipper with Ismusha and Flannel Math Animal. So back-to-back pure instrumental metal shows, and I don't even remember a time that that's ever happened.
Yeah.
So exactly. That'll be a ton of fun.
Do you find there's a certain almost kinship amongst the instrumental bands just because of the fact that you kind of unite on this whole not needing a singer?
Is a little bit. We do tend to stick together because I think that's the most common question for instrumental bands is, when are you getting a singer? Or, is your singer sick or you just haven't found one? So I think we all have experienced that question, or we're perceived as not being a real band if we don't have a singer, which is odd. But
yeah, certain people. And
yeah, some people just see it that way. But then there's, on the opposite spectrum, there's people that totally get what we're doing. And
And it's probably the best time now to do it too, in the sense because it's becoming more of an actual genre again. Like, hear people talk about the fact that Joe Satriani had songs on the radio in the 80s was sort of like unheard of, like instrumental guitar stuff. And now kind of thanks, I guess, to the whole like Animals as Leaders, like Scale the Summit kind of world. Now it's really, it's starting to be taken seriously again, like it should be in some ways, I think. So
it's probably a
good time for that.
Well, and there's a lot of good solo guitarists out there. Of course, Steve Vai, he has some tracks with vocals, but more instrumental. Joe Bonamassa does a ton of instrumental.
Yeah.
And we mentioned Snarky Puppy earlier, they're instrumental. It's out there if you look hard enough.
Oh yeah, you can always find that stuff. Like when you look down, definitely. I think maybe the thing that was less common for a while was bands that were like an active like metal band but didn't have any vocals. You know,
yeah,
that took, because usually like they were like guitarists or fusion groups or something. You know,
oh absolutely,
kind of mix that in with other stuff, but. I think what's interesting now is you got bands like yourself and a lot of these other bands you're talking about as well, kind of, they have that metal focus too, in addition to being, you know, instrumental and everything.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, yeah, instrumental music is always, you can always find it, but instrumental metal, yeah, this is a perfect time for it. There are more and more instrumental metal bands coming out. You mentioned a couple of great ones. There's also Intervals, who I mentioned, Pliny. There's Chimp Spanner and Tides of Man and... Yeah, there's just so many Russian Circles. There's a ton of cool instrumental, heavy rock and metal bands out there.
Oh, certainly.
We're happy to be a part of them.
Awesome, yeah. And you also, I know you've, in the past with some of the stuff that you've done, you kind of talked about how, you know, you look back on some of the earliest material and you're kind of like, well, I can't believe I was playing that fast and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that to kind of just to be... still the case, or have you kind of like revisited them any time recently, just kind of to see if you could still do it? Or
yeah, I will here and there in practice on my own. And there's actually a track from our first album that we're going to re-record down the road that's one of the faster ones. It's also a shorter song, so I think that's it's only saving grace there. But yeah, we do, and you know, next year will be our 10th year as a band, and we've been kind of starting to brainstorm a 10-year anniversary show and what we'd want to do for that. So the goal is my goal, I would hope the other guys agree, is to relearn a song or two from all of the albums and play a show where we play some of those challenging songs. So we should be relearning a few of them.
Yeah. Is it because since you've been moving more towards like shorter, more compact songs, does that reflect at all in the stuff that you've kind of been digging the most for your own like new music discoveries? Have you kind of been moving away from listening to like the 20-minute epics as much?
Or? Oh, not at all. No.
Oh, yeah.
I still love songs that long. I feel like if it's well written, I don't care how long or how short the song is. Because our whole goal is if we start writing a song and it does turn into a 10-minute song, if it's well written, we want to keep it at that length or even longer. We just try to let the song write itself, which is kind of a weird phrase, but I don't know. We just have gotten good at being able to tell when a song is long enough and when we've done as much as we can with it and when it feels right. So even we're talking about that at practice last night, that maybe down the road we will write another 10, 15-minute long song, but I think we'll know if it's good or not.
Right.
So... we'll see. But yeah, I still love listening to the epics. I can't get enough of stuff from Dream Theater and from the Flower Kings. And
yeah,
I love those long 20, 30 minute songs, because the way I listen to music anyways is just put an album on and listen to it from start to finish. I don't skip around.
That's the thing with me too. I've always been an album oriented listener. Like, I don't necessarily have a favorite song or like favorite songs as much as I have favorite albums, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what a good band intends, because it's you can listen to them individually, but they all tell a collective story. So that's what I think good albums accomplish anyways.
And you mentioned, of course, Dream Theater. Do you have by any chance a favorite like epic track for them? Cause I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
The other day.
Octavarium,
probably my favorite too. Although it's like, I mean, In the Presence of Enemies I like a lot too, but Octavarium is just like something about the way it just develops.
It's,
you know?
Well, it's got so many different moods and just genre shifts in it, and it's perfect, I think. It even has like a Pink Floyd-y beginning to it. And
Yeah,
it's kind of like their ultimate song. It touches on all of their catalog, really.
Yeah. Would you say that's also your favorite album for them? Or?
That's a tough choice. Probably Scenes from a Memory is my favorite album, because that was such a cohesive statement album.
It is,
and,
yeah.
You know, Falling into Infinity came out right before it and kind of flopped in terms of industry standards. I think it's a great album, but they had to come back so strong to stay signed, and they did that.
It's quite a mission statement, that album, in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, we're not screwing around here.
They were not at all. Yeah. So, yeah, that one, and then you know, next Friday, their new album comes out. It's a double album.
Yes.
So I'm really excited for that one.
I know. I'm kind of...
It'll be a lot to take in.
I'm thinking, yeah, apparently it's going to be like 2.5 hours total. Yeah. I'm like, the cheese.
I'm ready for it.
I figure at least half of it will be good, so...
I'm just going to call in sick to work and listen to that.
Yeah, of course. Probably if I had to choose a favorite, it'd be Awake.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of the one that I... Not even so much just the first one I really got into, but it's just somehow to me it feels like the one that is just such a cohesive selection of songs mm-hmm. for me. You know, it's just like really... stood out
yeah.
in their catalog somehow.
Oh, yeah, you can't go wrong with that one.
Yeah. I think most, oddly enough, a lot of people don't talk about the first album at all.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one.
Yeah, I really like When Dream and Day Unite, mm-hmm. but it obviously, I guess you can hear a little bit more of the Rush influence in there, and a little less distinctly
a little more,
Dream Theater. But.
Yeah, a little more rock-oriented and a little basic, but there are some very crazy and progressive experimental sections. You can see glimpses of what Dream Theater was going to turn into.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it is a fun album. I'll still put it on.
Yeah.
Not as often as I should, but...
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that was during a time where they would be able to still write, like, 5.5-minute long songs.
Yeah.
They could get, like, still get a solo section and, like, chorus, like, a little instrumental bit in
yeah,
5.5 minutes.
Yeah, so we know
minutes.
It can be done.
Yeah, exactly.
They just like to extend them.
Yeah, they did. It's weird with them. They actually kind of started... becoming more long-winded as they went on. It's not like they were like, okay, when they were young, we were like, you know, we were trying too hard to impress people. It's like they
yeah.
kind of reversed it. Like,
yeah.
They're doing more long-winded stuff now in a way.
Yeah, which I'm still okay with.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any problem with that at all.
Good.
Yeah.
At least we agree on that.
Yeah. No, it's cool to do that for sure. But so I know we've got another two more songs. What's the first one you want to play next?
We'll play a little mellower song here just to break things up. We did two mellow tracks for this album just to give the listener a chance to catch their breath, basically. So this song is called Echoes.
Echoes, right?
And yeah, probably more influenced by, you know, solo guitarists like Satriani and stuff, and even has a little Clapton kind of vibe in the solo, and it's a little bluesy near the middle. So yeah, I think you guys will enjoy it.
All right, so this will be Echoes by Odyssey off of the upcoming album Voids, right here on Mind of Metal. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Hello, Thin Air listeners. This is DJ JD inviting you to join me for 2 hours of retro punk, hardcore, and new wave music. It's called The Edge, and you can hear it every Monday night from 10 p.m. to midnight right here on your radio station, Thin Air Community Radio, KYRS.
KYRS wants your brand new car. Well, not really. Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car. Here's how. Donate it to KYRS. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Honk, honk!
KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. You are listening to Mind of Metal. I'm your host, Garrick, talking. And we're still here with Jordan from Odyssey, kind of wrapping up a bit of the interview we've been doing here, talking about the upcoming album Voids and also just the general musical nature of the band.
Yeah, we have been.
Yeah, so what? Anything else you want to talk about the album and tell us a little bit more about maybe where people can find it or anything like that?
Sure, yeah. Well, on February 5th, it will be released everywhere online, digitally. So the main source, if you want to support us directly to pick it up, is at our Bandcamp, which is odysseyspokane.bandcamp.com. And you can access that also through our Facebook. There's lots of links, which is facebook.com/odysseyspokane. And then it'll be on Spotify to stream. It'll be on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, pretty much any digital outlet. It should be on that service. And then we'll have physical copies of the CD for sale on our Bandcamp and at any show. So, and the CDs ship worldwide. So,
have you gotten any people from really unexpected countries ordering your albums ever? Or?
Yeah, I just... Somebody just pre-ordered the album from Switzerland the other day.
Oh, really?
So I'll be sending that out. It's pretty spendy to send it there, but
yeah.
I think it costs more to ship the CD than we charge for the CD. So, but yeah, we've sent out stuff to Italy, Norway, and Sweden, Great Britain, Spain, Canada, Mexico, Japan, Australia. So it's kind of cool to have the Bandcamp and take care of all the shipping myself, because then I get to see where it's going and, you know, what people are around the world are listening to us. So,
oh yeah, I mean,
it's
that
a lot
must
of fun.
It must be a gratifying feeling too.
It is, yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool. And then of course we ship quite a few in the U.S. The U.S. and Canada is definitely where I've mailed the most CDs to.
Oh sure, yeah.
But Europe is probably third, so. It's cool. And then, of course, the digital sales. That doesn't tell me where people live when they buy them, but we sell a lot more digital albums, and that's just the nature of the music business now.
Oh, so. Of course, yeah. But you guys also, I haven't, like, looked into this at all, but are you guys currently signed to, a label or anything directly, or is it kind of like you just self-release everything?
We were signed with Monolithic Records for The Turning Tide, but... they decided to restructure their business and go more of a management route. So we parted ways recently, which was fine because they're based in the UK. So we couldn't, it was only Skype calls and emails and things. So we could never sit down and talk. So yeah, now it's back to DIY, which is what I prefer with our band.
Yeah. So well, I mean, you...
It just works better for us.
Yeah, of course, and it's just more in your control, which
it
I
is.
Think any band really wants. I guess the main advantage people look at for labels is just the distribution in terms of, like, you know, more... You can
yeah.
go more places and stuff like that, I guess, but...
Yeah, but the internet's really changed that, too, because it was very, very easy to get our music on all those digital services.
Mm.
There's different websites out there, like TuneCore, and that you can pay a yearly subscription fee... and then get your album on every platform and collect royalties from it. So,
oh, fantastic.
It's a pretty easy process, and I'm surprised more bands don't do it, but maybe they see that subscription fee as a negative thing and don't want to pursue that. But it takes money to make money, so If you want to make something off your album, you have to invest in it a little bit to promote it.
Yeah, certainly. And do you guys, did you put yourself on Spotify too? Or
we did,
saw a few albums were on there.
Yeah, there's a couple on there that my uncle has a studio down in Phoenix that does music licensing for movies and TV. And we signed a contract with him for those first two albums, Objects in Space and An Abstract Existence. So we still retain the rights, but he can license them. So we made a deal with him where we got paid up front, so we don't collect royalties, but it's a way for us to get the music out there more, which for us was important at that time.
Yeah, and Spotify is a pretty nice source for the listening.
It really is,
for the listener,
yeah.
You know.
The only hard part on there is a lot of times we get lumped in with the 70s band Odyssey that did disco.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for us, it's easier to search by album title rather than band name.
Yeah. And from what I saw, I don't think, obviously, Voids isn't up there yet because it hasn't been released, but is it going to be up there as well?
It's all loaded and ready to go, and February 5th should be live.
All right, that'll be cool to check out there for anybody who wants to get a taste of it.
Absolutely.
And
I should mention February 1st on Metal Injection, there'll be an exclusive album stream so people can actually hear this whole Voids album 4 days early.
If they go
to metalinjection.net, I think. Or is it .com? I don't know.
We'll put links up. I haven't. I don't know. I mean, I know Metal Injection. I haven't thought about it.
Yeah. So it'll be up there.
I was just wondering, because, of course, it's cool you guys are doing a physical copy for the new album. As I've noticed, it's becoming slightly more common lately. It's still not probably the norm, but it's becoming more common to just do digital releases because of the fact no one buys physical copies anymore. I mean, I still do. I like having the copy to look at and read the booklet and everything. But do you think that's something you would stand by as like, I want to always release a physical copy no matter what?
Yeah, we will, because I'm a collector of CDs and records. I think they sound better, and I like being able to play them, just put a CD in my car and go, and because a lot of times my Bluetooth phone doesn't sync up just right, so or the song skips, or you run out of data, or whatever. I like the whole idea of the physical collection, having the CDs, so you can see the artwork and read liner notes, and I know there's other people out there like us that like to collect, I feel like that's something we'll always offer. It's smart to have options for people. So
definitely,
you never know what people which way they prefer to listen to music and collect it. So why not offer both?
Yeah, and it's funny. I was actually seeing an interview with Alex Webster from Cannibal Corpse talking a little bit about. They're asking him if they ever see like sales from their, like, do they get any royalties from their sales of CDs and stuff? And he was saying he actually thinks that metal has actually lasted a little bit better in terms of the purchasing of CDs and stuff, because the fans are just so into it. They tend to be a little bit more interested in the physical copy and the whole collecting part of it. Maybe like just rock and metal fans more so than
I would say so. Yeah. Fans. Most metal fans I know, we're all nerds at heart. So
yeah, exactly.
We're into collecting stuff. And I have so many friends that, every show they go to, they're buying t-shirts, CDs, any special things that the bands have on sale, like hats or whatever. And I think metal has definitely benefited from having a hardcore nerd fan base.
Yeah, and also being kind of underground too, because it does create a little bit of a, not to sound corny, but sort of a bit of a bond that everyone shares to some extent,
It does. It's like a big brotherhood, and
Brothers of metal,
Exactly.
Bring a little man war into it. No.
Why not?
but it's true, though, because I think that's something what you won't find as much in certain kinds of music now. I haven't like kept up to date with like what's happening in the electronic music scene in this respect, because I know there's a lot of like really in-depth electronic music fans. I know it has like endless subgenres, but a lot of the stuff, it seems like people aren't as concerned with the physical product like that as they are in heavier music.
It doesn't really seem like it. Yeah. It seems like their concern is, having the music played and then being able to dance to it.
Yeah.
They're more about that, about the experience, rather than having a wall of electronic music CDs.
Yeah.
So,
but I think on the other side of that coin, though, it is good that people can hear the music in advance online and stuff.
Yeah.
And can access it so quickly, because I imagine it's just so much easier now to know like a million bands.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's definitely good and bad. I don't think our band would be where we're at if we didn't have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it sort of devalues music a little bit because people think they should get it for free, that they don't know what goes into creating an album and how much it costs, money-wise and just your time and energy. So
yeah, I guess part of that internet culture is sort of created where people are so kind of isolated from what's happening in a way that they don't, you know, it's not like before in the 80s, you hear the stories, everybody was like, you know, they're part of the scene. Like everyone like kind of lived and breathed the music together. So they had to know and help everyone out. But now it's so easy to just completely be oblivious to that.
It is. Know? Yeah, definitely.
But I mean, it's cool though that we still have some of this still surviving in a way with this physical product and with the you know, keeping dedicated to it. I think
I don't think it'll go away completely, but you can definitely tell a decline when you go to any record shop now. There's just not as much, there's not as many options anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see coming back now are stores trying to make vinyl cool again to people, which I've always thought it is, but they repackage these modern releases on vinyl and sell it for like 2-3 times as much as a CD.
Yeah.
So, and I even see some people selling cassettes again, putting out their album exclusively on cassette. And it's like, okay, whatever works. I mean, that's truly a collector kind of thing, because I don't know many people with a working cassette player anymore.
Yeah. Plus, cassettes are just kind of a little bit more unreliable, the ones I've had.
They're sort of a pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really sure what the benefit is aside from it being kind of like an unusual thing now.
Yeah. I understand the record, but yeah, not cassette.
Yeah. But all right. So we've got one more song you want to play from your album. And is there, maybe it's catching you off guard a little bit, but is there maybe a song you'd like to request to play after that as well? Just of anything, or we could play.
Of anything.
Is there anything you're.
Probably, I think it. It's not metal, but if we could play Cool Number 9 from Joe Satriani after it.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's a great track.
That track.
That album is really underrated, too, because it's like when he did the bluesy kind of stuff.
Oh, I know. I just listened to it the other day, and I zoned out and loved it.
Yeah. I actually, it's weird. I had this time where I had like a ton of CDs. I still do. I actually have more now than I did at the time, but I would sell them when I when I wanted to get another one really bad. And now I kind of feel bad for selling that 95 Satriani. I'm like, I got to get that back, you know?
You do need to get it back.
Yeah. Because that one had some really unique stuff on it, like that song Killer Bebop. And
Yeah, it's such a cool album. A lot of fun.
A lot of twists thrown at you. But right, so talk a little bit about your next song before we let you go here, because everybody I know is tuning in probably wants to know what the next song is going to be. So
yeah, this last song we're going to play, we released it as our second single, just to show that we have kind of a little speed still left in us. And it's got some really interesting parts near the middle where it's kind of discordant and some interesting rhythm to it. So yeah, I really like this one. It's a challenge to play live, and it was a challenge to record, but it came across how we wanted it to. This one's called Before There Were Eyes to See.
All right, so Before There Were Eyes to See by Odyssey off of their upcoming album, Voids, everybody. Thanks a lot, Jordan, for stopping by and doing the interview.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, no problem. And thanks, everyone, listening at home. And, yeah, feel free to check out the new Odyssey album. All right, here we go.